The Shared Desk, Episode 1.
Episode 1.
I kind of like that. Talking over each other. Here we are trying to be so
professional
and polished as we are, as seasoned veteran old-timer podcasters. I was podcasting back in the day when we had two tin cans and a whole lot of fishing wire.
Talk for yourself. You started in 2005, so yeah, you are really
that's
old.
True. I am. I'm the old fart of podcasting. Actually, I am T. Morris.
And I'm Philippa Ballantyne.
And this is the official first episode of The Shared Desk. And today we are going to actually be talking about editorials. Editorial processes, the
editing, the arcane art of editing.
Yeah, because there's been a lot of debate about that, and now we have Phoenix Rising under our belts, mm-hmm. and you can always pick up Phoenix Rising as I can't pick it up at Borders anymore, but you can pick it up at your local Barnes & Noble and a purveyor of fine books everywhere. And you just finished actually working on Wraith.
Yeah, I finished the first draft of Wraith, so yeah.
You'll be going into edits for that real soon.
Yeah, I'm hoping that'll probably be another month away. Right. But we've got the edits of Cogs and Corsets. The process has started rolling.
Started today.
And I've also got editing for Hunter and Fox with Pyre Books
coming out next year. That's the new one.
Yeah, right. I took a look at the charming Luander's notes today, and they don't look too bad. I think when you start any editing process, there's the initial when you open up the letter for the first time to see what the editor has thought of your work.
I admit holding my breath when I get the editor's note. But at the same time, I'm ready and I'm actually anxious. I know this may seem very backwards, and I've heard many an author talk about how the editor is not a friend of the writer and the arch enemy.
They're not really paid to be a friend of
you.
No,
they're not.
They're supposed to be a friend of the book, not
they're
you.
They're supposed to be a friend of the publisher, actually. Yeah. Their job
is to make the best book.
Right, right. I mean, and I actually heard Ellen Datlow I don't remember where Ellen Datlow, Daw Books, I believe. I want to say Daw.
Mm-hmm.
She said, "My job as an editor is not to hack up a book. It's not to make a writer feel small. Mm-hmm. It's to take a good book and make it a great book."
Yeah, I think I have never thought that there's anybody in the world, and I'm looking at you, Stephen King and J.K. Rowling. I think there is not a person in the world who can't benefit from having a good editor look at their book.
From my experiences with everybody from mm-hmm. Dragon Moon Press to the folks at Wiley and even the folks at Q Publishing and now at Harper Voyager, I feel like has it been a smooth ride? Absolutely not. Actually, this entire conversation comes from a message that we both got on Facebook today
mm-hmm.
from
a fan, a friend.
I can, we don't want to say that. Hold on.
He's going to check it out. Yeah, and we were looking for a topic for our first podcast, and it was like, okay, editing.
Are you gonna stall while I run upstairs?
Yeah, I'm okay. Stalling. So we are thinking about editing, and obviously editing is fairly high in both of our minds at the moment, and it's something that I think writers sometimes struggle with, you know, not knowing how to deal with editors.
Be as footloose and as fancy.
Yeah, we're free-forming it, baby.
Yeah. They didn't think we could, but watch us. We're live without a net. And Cubby.
How much editing are we going to be doing in this? None. Yo,
more to the point, how much editing is T going to do? Yeah. Okay, actually, it was Matt. And Matt, if we get your name wrong, we apologize. Matt Bowerman.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say Bowerman.
And he was asking about what we can share his question.
Yeah. He said, I read that you got your notes back for Cogs, and I'm looking forward to that book, by the way. Yay. I was curious how extensive notes from the publisher can be, which is a great question because it really does depend on how much work the publisher thinks mm-hmm. the book needs. And Sorry, I lost my first love. And
that was the groan. That was the groan of your microphone, Stan. Just slump down in your chair. Oh dear. You can edit that bit out.
This is gold, baby. This is gold.
Come on back, boy. Come on back.
So really, it does. It depends on exactly how much work the editor thinks it needs, and also where you, as the author, I think, draws a line and says, okay, you know what? I'm going to give you this and I will give you that. But on this particular issue, I'm going to remain steadfast.
I mean, my so far, my editing that I've had done, I remember the first editing job I ever got back professionally, I cried. And then I picked myself up the floor. And I don't think I've cried since then. But I can only think of a couple of times where I've said, you know, if you can put yourself beyond, you know, this is my love and every word is golden.
If you I've never bought that as a writer. I mean, I know there are people that brag, oh yeah, I can write the first draft and it's ready for publishing. And I'm like, really? Really? Can you cure cancer too? Can you split the atom with your brain? Can you? Because I'd like to see that, because that's about as likely as getting it right on the first draft. I've never believed in the first draft theory. I've never believed in that.
Yeah, I can see why. It actually is kind of exciting when you get back. I mean, for me, when I read there's two kinds of editing, really, isn't there? We should start off with that, because there's the big picture editing and then there's the minor quibble, you know, editing.
Right.
You've got the plot, the characterization, all of that sort of stuff is big picture. And then you go through that process and then you get down to, this comma's in the wrong place or things like that.
I mean, that's what Matt was actually asking. He said, I don't want to pry into a current work before it's published. I was mostly wondering if they just ask about basic grammar or spelling, or do they get into requests of rewriting entire chapters?
I mean, you can.
Although it does sound like they can get pretty bizarre if you have to choose and pick your battles, because that's what I told them. I said to Matt, we live by the adage of choosing and picking your battles. Mm-hmm.
Have you got an example of picking your battle that you care to share, Ms.
That
Morris?
I care to share about choosing and picking the battle. Why don't you go on ahead? Because I know I had a battle concerning the battle I chose, at least with Phoenix Rising, was making sure that no matter how many changes were made, that Eliza was not going to be made British, which was one of the pitches that was put on the table.
Yeah, that wasn't HarperCollins.
No, it was not HarperCollins, but that was one of my arguments against that particular editor. I was like, absolutely not. And I remember you were just like, well, you know, let's.
I was thinking about it, and then the chum went in the water, and we got lots of people. Yeah, and then I was like, okay. but the particular bit I'm thinking about, and I can talk about this now because Spectre is out, is that the lovely Danielle over at Ace, Danielle Stockley.
Mm-hmm.
She is a great editor. I really enjoy what she has to say, but she didn't like the bit she didn't like in Spectre was I don't know if you've got to this bit yet, was the time travel section.
Spoiler alert.
Well, I'm not going to tell you what happens in the time travel section, but I will say that there was this bit she said.
Merrick has a little gizmo, and when he opened it up,
no,
and the Omni's
red. get a word in edgewise. I'm telling an important story.
Yes, I know.
And we're waiting. I'll hit you with this coaster in the head if you don't.
All right.
There's a bit where one of the characters does some time travel, and she. I'm going to. T is making stupid faces. I'm telling you on the
this
audience.
Should be a video podcast.
It should be, and it will be if you're not careful.
So I'm done.
Hut!
look, you're a nice guy and all, but we're done professionally.
Yes, we're on episode one. And we're done professionally.
Time travel. So you had a time travel. And I take it Danielle was not keen on the time travel.
She, I can't exactly remember what her issue was with it. I mean, it fits within how the other side in Geist and Spectre, which is another realm, another layer of consciousness. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell you what it is. how that connects with the actual, their real world. And to my concept, the other side doesn't really have time, so to speak. So therefore, creatures can travel between time. And I think she thought there was historical background that I wanted to put forward, and by having a character travel back in time, I avoided that whole, well, you know.
As you know, Bob.
As you know, Bob. Back in the beginning of
but
time.
But my name's Merrick. Why do you call me Bob?
I didn't want to have one of
and
those
you
scenes.
You didn't want to do a Mega Mondo flashback.
I didn't want them reading a book. Right. I didn't want them looking at a tapestry. I, you know.
Right.
And so I laid down a couple of I said, well, it helps one character evolve. It gives them some chances to do some things that are important, and it shows the past, and it shows how the past connects with the with the current situation.
And you already have. I mean, the time travel actually doesn't. It's not that far of a stretch or a crutch in the books of the Order, because you already have the possibility matrix, which you established in Geist.
Yes.
So if you can see in the future, obviously, well, at least for me logically, because I'm a sucker for time travel stories. If you can see in the past, or if you can see in the future with the possibility matrix, you should have the ability, whether it's in flashback or whether it's in, in isolation chamber with William Hurt, you know, you should be able to travel into the past.
Yeah. So, I mean, I that was the only thing I really balked on and said, no, I really want that bit to be there for this character's development, especially as well. And she was like, okay. Basically, it was just that I had to defend
it. Yeah,
I had to justify it and say, well, it does this, 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 and this.
Right.
It wasn't just, I like this and I had fun writing it and I got to use some cool words.
Right. I mean, and part of what an editor's job is not only to see how committed you are to issue A, issue B, issue C. I mean, I already see myself... just in the initial note from Diana Gill, I can see where I can, or I was telling you during dinner tonight, I said I'm not gonna budge on. I would like to put up a fight for this particular issue.
I mean, also there when you see an issue that you want to, you know, a point that you disagree on, you can also, maybe it just needs to be blended into the story better. Maybe it needs.
And that's what I think is an editor's job, as Ellen Datlow had said, you know, her job is to make a good book a great book,
mm-hmm.
and to make the writer a better writer. Mm-hmm. And the story I pull from is from Phoenix Rising, when Diana said, "This is a lovely fun romp." But it's very linear. We need more.
And she was right about that.
Yeah, she was absolutely right.
Well, it was linear because it wasn't ever meant to be a novel.
No, it wasn't. But at the same time,
it's going to start off as a podcast for pages for people who don't know.
But what she did though was she made us think. Well, what could we bring into this? Mm-hmm. What's that missing element? And we brought in
the interludes.
More interludes and the Duke of Sussex.
Yes.
And that character really, really came through. Well, both he and Bruce Campbell both came through in part two.
I think it nicely expanded the world as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
In fact, and when Spectre, when I said, I want to keep that bit and this is the reasons, and she said, okay. Then she said, okay, if you're going to keep it, then add these bits in to make it more.
Mm-hmm.
And so actually the time travel bit expanded to become more.
I just remember when Diana told us, you know, you need more subplots, you need this, you need that, you need this, you need that. And so we dropped in an extra 30,000 words.
Yeah.
And I remember being on Twitter and saying, you know, our manuscript is off to Diana Gill with an extra 30,000 words. And she tweeted back, 3,000 words?
Yeah.
That's a lot of words. And I remember replying, yeah, but they're all awesome.
Yeah. You know what publishers are thinking about? They're thinking about, you know, costs.
They're thinking about
costs
and things like that. Sure. But again, the editor's job is to make sure that you're making the best book you can possibly make.
Yeah.
I've never bought into the argument that editors are there to alter your vision.
If they do, they're bad editors.
Yeah. Yeah,
because the book, I mean, the editor has an important connection with the book, but at the end of the day, it's your book. Your name's on the cover of it, not theirs.
Now, something I don't think you've done as extensively as I've done has been being has actually sat in the editor's chair.
No.
It's an intimidating chair to sit in. I'm the first one to tell you. I mean,
I don't know. I don't think I'd be very comfortable doing it.
But you have to be. I mean, you have to be because you're thinking again on the bigger picture.
I'm happy to edit my own stuff, you know, and everyone does for the first draft and stuff.
But editing other people's stuff. But what's great about editing other people's stuff though is you get to empathize with what your editor is dealing with. For Tales from the Archives, I'm there with Phil Rossi's story, The Shadows of Calcutta, and I loved the story, but the beginning was all wrong. Mm-hmm. And I actually cut, I want to say I removed about 3,000 words. Now, he had about 9,000 words to start with, and we were asking for 4 to 6. So we had some wiggle room.
What is it with you, man? But, always give us more words.
We're compensating. But the end result.
Don't hit the bell for just when you feel like it.
It's there.
It's only for a .com.
Yep. Okay, fine.
Or a .org.
Anyway.
Or a .gov. Yeah.
No, unfortunately, all of our .govs right now are broke. So but going back to what I was saying, that when I made the cuts that I made, and then made some alterations to stay true to what was happening in the Ministry universe, Phil was okay with it. And I actually think it's a better story because of it. Same thing with Jack Mangan. There were some things in Knights Plutonian Shore that I had to cut, like the one example. And Jack was like, I'm totally cool with that change. It was strictly for the Bruce Campbell reference. He had the character say, just me, baby, just me. And, you know, he was doing it as a nod to Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
The actor Bruce Campbell. And I'm totally cool with that. But it didn't work. It really ripped me out of the story because I don't think people back then called each other baby. So, you know.
Well, that's another thing, is looking for anachronisms.
And again, that is where you as the editor have to step in and say, here are the parameters. And we're going to have a whole show where we talk about playing in other people's sandboxes and having people come into our sandbox and play, which has been a lot of fun. I mean, Pip's got experience with both Tales from the Archives and Chronicles of the Order, something you're going to be hopefully starting up again real soon.
Yeah, now that I've got out from under that first. I don't have to produce. Did I mention I don't have another book to produce until August next year?
That's
first draft.
For now.
I'm going to start. I've actually started on Harbinger. I've already written the first sentence.
Well, there you go. You're off and running.
Half the first sentence.
Yeah, but now you got to edit. So that's our spin on editors. You know, we love them and we think they're an essential part. And when you're working together as Pip and I do, I think it's also good to have not just talk about how we're working together, but also how we're working with our editor.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're
really your business partner.
Right.
As far as the book goes. So.
And it's their job to make you better writers.
Eagle
versus Kiwi. Okay, I have an issue.
Yeah, I know you do.
I have many issues.
Well, you have many issues.
But
You still haven't gotten, you know, look, I put a ring on it, okay? I admit it. I liked it, so I put a ring on it. But let's not get cocky. You haven't gotten your green card yet. So you watch your step, Missy, okay?
Well, actually, we're venturing onto my territory now.
Oh, sort of. Okay, let me preface.
Well, it's closer to my territory than your territory, mate.
All right, so.
About 11,000 miles closer.
So, all right. So, what we're talking about.
What we're going to do is every.
The first mistake was putting you into the taking you to the Outback.
I think we should say that we're going to alternate weeks. One week I'm going to bring up something about America. Next thing you're going to bring up something about New Zealand.
Okay.
Or a New Zealander.
Or a New Zealander. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Durr.
So let me preface the story by what's winding up Ballantyne over here. I tried to talk her out of it. Okay. This is last year at Balticon. This is last year at Balticon 44. And Pip decides that she wants to go eat at the Outback.
I've been obsessing about this for a year.
Yeah.
I just realized.
Yeah. Yeah. And yet, okay, I'm going
to tell my story.
I'm going to get back to so we go to the Outback, and this is before they remodel the Outback, and it's like the uber over the top Australian gaudy fest that.
Well, I found that bit quite amusing, yeah. Actually, because it's not a New Zealand gaudy fest.
Right.
Quite funny.
So
then we sit down and open the menu.
So we sit down and we open the menu, and I felt so bad for the waitress. You are tearing into this waitress like we're an Australian-themed restaurant, and you put on their New Zealand lamb. Why? You know what I mean?
It's the worst New Zealand accent I've ever heard.
Wait until I get to my rant. Okay, so why don't you go on ahead and tell your side of the
story? Well, look.
Why did you lay in on that?
Well, look, okay, for first off, because when I opened the menu, they had New Zealand lamb on, and everything else was supposedly Australian-themed. It isn't.
Kookaburra fries,
here
mate.
Here comes my Outback rant.
Alice Springs
I'm
going to
stick
chicken.
This in your nose. Now, back in the box. For the starter, I thought when we were going to the Outback, there would be things like kangaroo and crocodile on the menu. I didn't realize it was essentially an American steakhouse with an Australian veneer slapped on.
You mean to tell me in Australia you don't have a blooming onion, mate?
No, we do not. Nor do Alice Springs have quesadillas. But my greatest outrage...
Good day, amigo.
My greatest outrage was reserved for the New Zealand lamb that was on the menu. And I admit... I saw a little red when the waitress came. I wanted to know why there was New Zealand lamb in an Australian themed restaurant.
I'm just going to say it. You were a bitch to that waitress.
I was
you
not.
Were.
We
you
tipped
were.
Her.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Tipped her.
No, I tipped her.
I would have given her a tip. Well, then I thought, but then I calmed down a bit and I thought, well, at least it's showing that Australian lamb isn't that good because they haven't got any here. It's all New Zealand lamb. But then I thought, okay, well, they've got New Zealand lamb here. Okay, I'll have a bit of New Zealand lamb. I've missed New Zealand lamb. Okay. And then I thought, well, the only thing that you have with New Zealand lamb, if you know anything, if you have two brain cells to rub together, is mint sauce.
Aha. Now, please, educate the American Neanderthals.
I will tell you what it is supposed to be.
And then
we'll go downhill
to,
from
yes,
there.
Yeah.
Mint sauce is supposed to be... white wine vinegar, some sort of sugar, and chopped up mint leaves. You know, the mint. What they brought out was mint jelly. And it still tasted like jello with a vague minty flavor. It was vile.
It was green.
It was bright green. A color that God never intended to have, you know, outside of an Amazonian rainforest in a little
and broccoli.
Pot. It was bright. It was that green.
Yeah.
And I did.
It was broccoli green.
I thought perhaps, you know, maybe it tasted the same as mint sauce. But no, it actually tasted sweet. Like
real, jelly.
Like jelly. Or jam, as New Zealanders would say.
Yeah, but it was jelly. It was, yeah. It was, you know, it was.
It was an insult to the lamb. So I'm sorry.
Don't. Let's not feel too sad for gullible Philippa over here, who for some reason figured, oh, it must be New Zealand lamb because it has New Zealand in the title, just like the Alice Springs.
No, it is New Zealand. It was New Zealand lamb.
Oh, it was New Zealand lamb?
Okay. You can't. I'm sorry. New Zealand will sue
right.
you if you try.
That's
and,
right. It was New Zealand lamb because when we went back to the Outback again.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. She wasn't that offended by it because she went back
for
seconds.
Oh, excuse me. We had a voucher. We had a card.
Oh, can't let the...
All bets are off. Besides, I must say that the
because
lamb...
Because we had a gift card,
we had to
Philippa
get...
soldiered
well,
on.
Well, no, because that time at least I was prepared to Very not hard. Put that damn jelly on my lamb.
You asked for it again. You were saying, can I have mint sauce?
I didn't put it on, though. And then when I saw it again, I was like, oh, that's
yeah.
right. I remember now. So next time I am going to go to the Outback restaurant, I will...
I'll sneak in my own mint sauce, not jelly.
Do not put jelly on lamb. It is an abomination. And our and you know that black sheep thing that they'll march into America and like take it. And so that's why I say America, WTF.
Writers off the clock.
So what do you want to do?
I don't know. What do you want to do?
I don't know.
Idea.
So with that that bumper, as you can tell, we try not to overwork, because if we get overworked and then we get on pod, we get a little slap happy. We were slap happy when we originally recorded that.
Yeah,
that bumper.
I think we were. But it was funny.
Oh no, it was, like I said, comedy gold. So what we're talking about on Writers Off the Clock, as we've said before, is that these are things that we do when we're not writing. This is, you know, because
we do have lives outside writing.
We try to have lives outside.
A little bit.
Yeah. But this life is in jeopardy. It's hanging on by a thread. Speaking, of course, about is this season four or season
four?
Yeah, season four. Of True Blood.
Is it four or is it three?
I'm going to say the current season of True Blood. So the current season of
the
True Blood.
The one with the witches.
The current season of True Blood currently is, in my opinion, it reminds me a lot of the final years of Seinfeld, the final seasons of Seinfeld, which I stopped watching. What made Seinfeld such a great show for me, and you'll see how this ties in with True Blood in just a moment, is that Seinfeld was genius in the early seasons, because there was one major plot line,
mm-hmm.
but there were all these other little plot lines happening on the sidelines. But the neat thing was that the plot lines on the side somehow would tie into the main plot line, and then you would cut away to Seinfeld doing his stand-up routines, which I thought was always genius. Well, and of course, the perfect example of that is the Soup Nazi. The Soup Nazi episode...
No soup for you!
No soup for you! But what was great about the Soup Nazi was that Elaine's plot line for the Soup Nazi was that she got this beautiful Chesterfield... It was some antique furniture, and she happened to find in the top shelf the recipes of the Soup Nazi, who said to her, "No soup for you." And there were two other plot lines that happened in that show, and they all tied back to this guy, mm-hmm. the Soup Nazi. That was
genius. Can you
bring
him into True Blood?
I'm getting there. Yeah, this coaster could fit in a few inappropriate places.
We should have
too.
A sound effect for like when we're giving each other dirty looks.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Doing,
I'll just drop in. I know what it is. I'll drop in a Firefly quote.
You want to run this ship? Yes. Well, you can't.
It's always good with the Firefly quotes. So, how this ties into True Blood though, is that in the end, when I stopped watching Seinfeld, everybody had to have their own plot. Everybody did. This is when they were getting paid far too much an episode each, and everybody had to have their own independent storyline. And it just became very unfunny to watch. Mm. That's the way I'm feeling about True Blood right now. I feel like right now everybody is insisting that they get their own plot lines, and what was great about the earlier seasons was that some people had plot lines, some people played into other plot lines, but not everybody needed their
not
own
everybody.
Plot line.
I mean, it feels like at the moment that everybody is supposed to be a main player.
You yeah.
know, everyone's supposed yeah. to be a primary act. I think this is season three, actually, because the first one was the main ads, the what was the second one?
No, the first one. The first one was.
Oh,
just,
the first
was yeah. was just the vampires.
Yes,
the first one was just
the second the one was the main ads, and this is the episode with the third season.
Right.
Because we True Blood has always been crazy.
Oh, True Blood's been insane.
I mean, there's all sorts of crazy things going left and right, and but it just feels like the
Tara, you're not watching.
Yeah, actually, yes, second season was good. But I think you find this with movies as well. People like, okay, well, people liked what we gave them in the first movie, so we'll make more. We'll put more into the second
more.
One. And sometimes more is not any, it's not better. In fact, it could be worse.
Yeah.
And you find that with like the Spider-Man movies when they started throwing so many villains in there. It was like, oh,
or,
my gosh.
Or Joel Schumacher's Batman.
I mean, there's
movies.
Only so much concentration that people can have, especially on a Sunday night.
And the but what's really frustrating about True Blood is that it just seems like right now we're getting plot lines that we just don't care about.
Yes. Let's name some. The Trash Baby.
There's Trash Baby. There's I hate to say this. I'm lumping Lafayette and his
subplot.
Yeah,
we love Lafayette. But...
I know. Hooker. You know, I mean, I love me some Lafayette, but right now, he's just really kind of... He was
supposed to die in the first season.
He's a whiny... I'm sorry. Lafayette's a whiny bitch in this scene. He really is a whiny bitch. He's starting to piss me off.
He is. I think he works better as a secondary character.
Yeah. I mean, he was great. He was great in the, you know, I mean, it was great when he had our Lafayette moments, but right now he's just getting so, he's almost too Lafayette right now. Cause we have to get those, you know, it was great when he just kind of showed up and then disappeared. And you know, now he's got
he did some great little stuff when he was locked up at the underneath Fantasia
exactly.
And stuff like that. And it just feels like they're trying to make him important.
Yeah.
And he is important because he's a nice character and we care about him. We don't have to make him the grand poo bar of magic
for us to care about him. And right now he's one step ahead. He's one step to being New Orleans Harry Potter. And I just think that we need to pull back a little bit from that.
What about Tara?
Okay. Now Tara. All right.
Well, from the beginning, people have been saying get rid of Tara.
And
people don't like her.
Well, I've never had a problem with Tara. Except this season, I've had a huge problem with Tara because she went on a tear about how she had to get out of Bon Temps.
She hated it so much.
What is she comes back to Bon Temps.
And she shows her girlfriend around the town.
If your girlfriend shows up and you basically said how much you hate the place.
And how bad things happen to people there.
That's when the girlfriend should go, then let's get in the car and get the fuck out of town. Because,
all the people, she says, all the people I love, you know, something horrible's happened to them. Then why are you taking the person that you love currently and showing her around?
Exactly.
I would be like, no, don't stop. Don't turn off the car. I'm jumping in. Let's go.
And let's go. I mean, and I think, I would I like it if they killed off Tara? Absolutely not. Would I like it if they just put her in the car and sent her back to New Orleans with her lesbian lover? Yes, I would. Because we knew that then she was in mixed martial arts and she was happy.
Yeah.
You know, she was getting paid to kick ass. And I'm okay with that. I'm more than okay with that. It has nothing to do with the character. She was happier out of Bon Temps. Now, granted, people are going, well, it's conflict. You need conflict. Yeah, but there's conflict.
There's enough conflict in this.
There's enough conflict in this season going on. We really don't want or need... But it goes back to the thing of Tara, if you hate Bon Temps so much, why are you sticking around and why are you giving your girlfriend the nickel and dime tour, okay? All right, so you got that plot line going on. All right, Sam's plot line's kind of running a sort of a hot and cold thing. Sam's plot line, which is
I love Tay Sam.
I know you love Tay Sam. You wrote about Tay Sam.
I did write about Tay Sam. But I also think that Sam also does quite nicely as a sort of a secondary character.
And as a solo character. The whole thing with the brother, that's also kind of like, you know.
I like the guy that plays Tommy.
Tommy, yeah.
I like the guy that plays Tommy, and they're obviously trying to integrate him as well. But
it's not working for me. It's not working for me.
He could definitely be a secondary character.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to keep him around, fine.
Keep him around, yeah.
But don't. So there's like three or four plot lines that feel that because there's only so much time that they have every week to tell Sookie's story and Eric's story and Bill's
Sookie
story.
Sookie is actually feeling like a secondary character this season.
Yeah, she's. Yeah, I mean, what has she been doing except looking pie-eyed at Eric? I mean, fair enough, I can understand that. But
yeah.
I mean, she doesn't.
You
seem
know,
to be
I might
doing...
just take you to go see Battleship next summer just so that you would stop looking at Eric in that pie-eyed way.
Well, I don't know if he's taking his shirt off.
I don't think he is.
Oh, no. Now, so we're saying that they need to prune some, but I have also heard people saying they don't like Eric being all kind of, Sookie and being sweet.
I'm enjoying the kinder, gentler Eric. I want my old Eric.
old Eric's coming back.
Oh, you know he's coming back. But I do like seeing, first off, one, I like seeing the actor's name, Alexander Sarsgaard.
Alexander Skarsgård, I think it is.
Um, I like seeing him stretch his limits. I like seeing him vulnerable, because that was something you never saw Eric be. Mm-hmm. Except for when he had his maker there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you actually saw that. You saw a glimpse of the depth that you that this actor did. So I'm enjoying this. I'm enjoying this rather. In fact, my favorite moment has been when there was another plot thread that just sort of came. That was one of those plot threads that was so half-baked, it just came and went. And I'm like...
The fairy one?
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, is this going to come back? Because really, that was boring me to tears,
it
too.
It is supposed to come back later on in later books.
Well, it did, wasn't... But I love the fact that when he sucked her dry, and she goes, "You just killed my fairy godmother." And he said, "Sorry." And then this little shrug, like,
shrug.
Don't, you know,
don't. My bad.
Sorry. Whoopsie.
I tripped and fell.
I tripped and fell on her, and fortunately her neck broke my fangs fall. I almost chipped a tooth.
You're okay with the vulnerable Eric.
I'm okay with vulnerable Eric, provided at the very end of this season we get bad naughty, bad naughty, you know, hookers chained up in the basement.
Now what about Pam and her rotting face?
We better get some. I love me some Pam.
They better not get Pam.
If they get rid of Pam,
are you picking up what I'm laying down?
That's what I'm saying. Look, if they knock off Pam, if they knock off Pam, I'm done with True Blood. I'm done with True.
You hear that, HBO?
I will go there on this podcast. I am done with True Blood. I mean, Bill is king. I'm kind of digging.
He's enjoying it. Yeah. I think Pam pointed out that
you like this.
You're kind of liking it. Yeah.
And I mean, that's what's been keeping me in there, are these little glimmers of the True Blood that I remember.
Oh yeah, because I would like to see more of that story. I'd like to see more about Marnie, because the actress who's playing Marnie is really doing
Fiona Shaw.
Yeah.
Oh, she played Petunia Dursley in the Harry Potter films. I've actually seen her on stage, and she's a wonderful actress. And I'm fascinated with that plot line. That's a great plot line.
Yeah.
But right now, it just feels like that main plot line is getting completely lost in all the superficial
crap. Trash Baby. I think Trash Baby
Trash Baby's got to go.
It's the stupidest one of them all.
And I'm sorry, but
if one of your good friends gave your child a doll that looked like it had been sitting in a skip in a trash.
I can tell you right now. I can tell you right now.
Would you say, "Oh, that's nice," and put it in the crib?
Even at the age that Sonic Boom was when that baby was supposed to be. Even if Sonic Boom was an evil incarnate baby, that doll would make her cry.
Well, if you think you have an evil incarnate baby, why would you give it that sort of scary ass doll?
I mean. It's a dumb plot. It's a really dumb plot line. And so, I mean, that's a dumb plot line.
And
Tara spending time in Bone Tomp, that's a Oh, and the Werepanthers. I think we're done for the moment with the Werepanthers. That was getting a little Deliverance-esque.
That is in the books.
Yeah, but that was getting a little Deliverance-esque. A little too close to you. You got a nice smile there, boy. Although it was the women saying that to Jason, and Jason is a handsome man. But I mean, it was getting a little oogie there.
Yeah,
I mean,
it looks like the Werepanthers should have stepped outside their gene pool a little more.
Yeah.
Although I think the concept of being a Werepanther is super awesome.
Yeah, well, I mean, the concept's great and all, but it just
we got to see Jason's naked chest for a considerable length of time.
Thank you. That was the other thing too. I was never really crazy.
Oh, and Al Seed.
Oh yeah, that one's got to go too.
I want to just show us Debbie going crazy again. We want to see skanky Debbie.
I don't
want to
know. I really don't want to see.
No, I enjoyed that.
We've been there. We've done that.
They killed my cooter.
And it would have been nice. Al Seed comes in. I'm here, Sookie. Takes his shirt off. You're happy. I gotta go now, Sookie. He leaves. Doesn't bother putting his shirt on, but he just leaves.
And he's had his little cameo.
Yeah, and then and that would have been great. That would have been great. But this whole thing of, you know, bringing in the werewolves now, it's like, really?
Yeah, it's a bit too, I mean, the gumbo is starting to get a little crowded.
Yeah, yeah. it's no longer a hearty soup. It's now a custard, and you could stick your fork in it.
It's got everything in it. It's like it's got meatballs and clams and
dirty old socks and panther shit. And, you know, I mean, just stuff you don't want in your gumbo.
So what we're trying to say is, creators of True Blood, we loved the crazy two seasons you gave us.
Yes.
Can you prune some of these? Deadwood off.
Can
and
you hit,
can you hit the
Prozac just a bit? dial it back
to 11.
Dial it back
to
11.
We liked it at 11. Don't take us to 15 because 15 is just too much. But and do forget to remember. Everyone needs to have their shirt off. That's all I'm saying.
I'm telling you, Pip. I'm telling you. Not everyone in Louisiana looks like the guys from True Blood.
You got to take me there. Prove it. Prove it. In my head, Louisiana is full of...
If they do, all bets are off and I get to go find the girls that look like Sookie and so forth, okay?
I know. You can have Dirty Debbie.
Yeah!
And that's all we got to say about that.
Thank you. So there you go with episode one.
Hope you liked it.
Yeah.
We had fun.
Yeah. Just expect more of this. This is what we're going to... It's just going to be the two of us riffing on the mic. Actually, yeah, we should probably mention that. Volume one of Tales from the Archives, we've got three stories left. We've got a story that I've written... And then we've got Starla Hutchton. And then the last story we have is a short story that Pip and I have worked on together. Mm-hmm. And that will be the last one for volume one. Did we want to just go ahead and say there was going to definitely be a volume two?
I think there's definitely going to be a volume two.
Yeah.
Next year.
Yeah. It's been a lot of fun. So where are we going to be this month?
According to the calendar, we're going to be in Reno, Nevada, attending Worldcon on the 18th of August.
And then we'll be there until Saturday night, and then Sunday morning.
And we fly out.
Yeah, we fly out. Sorry, everybody.
Maybe we just stay awake. I don't know.
Well, you know, that might be a temptation to just stay up just all get on the Saturday plane, night and then just pick,
sleep like a log all the way.
Sleep like a log all the way. Why
well,
not?
We should say that we're doing various things. You can find out on our website where we're going to be, but we're going to be doing things like cafe clatches, mm-hmm. Some readings, some signings.
We've also got some panels. Yeah, we got some panels.
Panel on collaboration.
Sure.
I'm going to be on a panel about Doctor Who.
Yeah, and so it's going to be it's already shaping up to be a really really nice nice Worldcon. Mm. And
I think we should also suggest.
Wanted to mention this one: collaborations. We are doing a collaborations panel. I'm looking forward to this. It's a collaborations panel. We're going to be on a panel with Sharon Lee and Steve Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you who are fans of Lee and Miller as a writing duo. I've had the pleasure of being on a panel with them about collaborations, but this will be the first time that I'm there with my partner in real time. It's going to be, yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. So please, if you want to, you know, that's our big thing. We don't want you to be shy. A couple of times we've received notes from people saying, I saw you, but I was afraid to say something or, you know, you looked really busy. It's like, look, we are never too busy to pose for a photograph, to say hi, please,
sign a book.
You know, that's why we go to these cons. You know, we go to these cons to have a good time with our friends.
We're fairly sociable people.
But we also like to meet people that have been listening to us or have been inspired by us or just want to be able to say, yeah, those, like with Alex White from the Gearheart. He was sitting in a dentist's office.
Oh, that's right. And he saw somebody was reading our book, Phoenix Rising.
And he went up to him and he said, "You enjoying the book?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "I'm friends with the author." And then he whips out his iPhone.
And it shows pictures of us.
Oh, we love you, bro. We love you.
That's the Gearheart.
TheGearheart.com. Oh, and a new one. Just real quick, Alex is doing a new project called Disaster Theatre. Disaster Theatre. And what it is, it's Alex and two friends, and they basically come up with really bad ideas that could possibly make it in Hollywood.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, I listened to the Milla Jovovich episode, and I was trying.
Oh my gosh, there's a lot of territory. To
I was trying
there.
Very hard not to laugh too loud. It was good stuff, really good stuff.
I was thinking that perhaps we could ask any listeners. There are probably some people listening to this.
Just a few.
If they wanted to send us any questions or queries or ideas of things that they might want to hear us talk about or
absolutely
discuss, then they can send them to.
You can go on ahead and find us at tmorris.com, at pjballantine.com. You can find us on Facebook under, we both have groups.
Just search our names, you'll find us.
Yep, you'll find us that way.
We're both on Twitter, so you can tweet them at us.
Philippa Jane and T-Monster.
That's two separate ones.
Yeah. And then, of course, if you want to chat with our character alter egos, Eliza Braun and Wellington Books, you can always look us up on Twitter under Books and Braun.
Ooh. Sounds like you're wearing out your bell.
Yeah, I'm wearing out the bell. So we'll see you guys at Worldcon and on our next podcast. We'll be talking more, hopefully, about plans we have coming up in September and, knock wood, October. But until then, you've been listening to The Shared Desk. It's licensed under Creative Commons 3.5. No derivatives. And
how long have you been doing this?
Share-like, no derivatives license. I'm T. Morris.
I'm Philippa Ballantyne.
And by all means, please enjoy the ride.
We'll catch you later.